welcome to another episode of the That's So Cincinnati podcast. I'm your host, Bro Love, editor of the Enquirer, and our guest host this week is none other than our Bengals beat reporter, Kelsey Conway. Hi, Kelsey.
Hi. You know, this is my first time hosting or even being on the That's So Cincinnati podcast.
Oh, I'm going to go back and look at the tapes. I think you've been on before. Haven't you?
Oh, actually, maybe once during the playoff. Oh, after the DeMar Hamlin.
Yes.
Okay, so I'm wrong.
But you haven't hosted.
Yes, I've never hosted. So at least I'm right with that.
Well, you're no stranger to hosting podcasts. Normally, you're anchoring the Bengals Beat podcast. And I promise to our regular listeners of That's So Cincinnati that this is not going to be an in the weeds, X's and O's version of the Bengals Beat podcast, because you can listen to that. But we do just want to talk about, you know, the season starts this week. And our special guest, let's tee him up, is Dave Lapham, longtime voice of the Bengals, doing color on Bengals radio, played for the Bengals, was on the Super Bowl team in 2016, and is one of two inductees this year into the Bengals Ring of Honor with Lamar Parrish. So he's going to be our special guest. Mm-hmm. So who better than to host than you, Kelsey, since
we
have
Lap coming
on.
Thank you so much for having me on.
All right. So you have been on this beat. Mm-hmm. Now, this is the fifth season.
I know, right?
I can't believe that.
I know. It's flown by.
It has flown by. And I think I'm going to mention this before, but when you took the job, I was almost apologizing for the fact that the Bengals were so bad at the time. I was like, oh, Kelsey, you know, I promise you they're going to get better. It's going to be a fun beat to cover. They got this new kid from LSU, this quarterback.
Heard he's pretty good.
I hear he's pretty good. He might do good things. And then the very first full season you're with us, you get to go to the Super Bowl.
And then the AFC Championship the next year.
I know.
Crazy.
I know. So what a ride you've had. But how are you feeling about the team this year?
You know, I'm trying to, of course, I'm going to be releasing my game-by-game predictions. I believe that's coming out on Thursday, and it'll be, we're doing a big print section to kick off the season with all of those predictions on Sunday. So be sure to check that out. But last year, I believe I had them at 10-7, and they underwhelmed. And so I'm trying to go into this season not overhyping, but also at the same time understanding that when you have Joe Burrow and the two receivers that they have, no matter what you have on defense, I believe that gets you to at least 9 wins. So I don't know what to think about the defense, and I get a ton of questions about it. Like, do they look better? What do you think? It's almost impossible to tell because of what they said about not showing, but I was at every single training camp practice. There were moments where they looked better in practice than they did during games. I will say that, but it's really hard for me to make a prediction of what I think about this season until I see multiple games of the defense under Al Golden, and if some of these players actually start playing better that they think will with him. But I do know this: the pressure is on for everyone inside the building, starting at the top with Zach Taylor and Duke Tobin, because they have missed the playoffs the last two seasons. And typically in the NFL, if you miss the playoffs 3 seasons in a row, that's when change comes to some degree. And when,
even if you've been to the Super Bowl.
Right. And I think that's heightened to a new degree because Zach fired his defensive coordinator, right? Like, you typically get 1 year of being able to blow up your coaching staff. Fired the offensive line coach, fired the defensive line coach, has all these new coaches in, and the Bengals are really hanging their hat on this message. We believe Al Golden will fix a lot of our problems on defense. And now it's like, okay, let's see it. Because if it doesn't happen that way, then fingers are going to start pointing at two people, Zach Taylor and Duke Tobin. And on the offensive side of the ball, it really just comes down to, I would love to be able to pick the Bengals to go 12-5, but I can't go there yet because history tells me the slow starts are an issue. And I know a lot of that has been about Joe not being healthy during preseason training camp, but I'm kind of cautiously, like, I'll believe it when I see it. I do think that they're going to win in Cleveland, but I think I'm just entering the season with a lot of questions that I want to see answered in the first couple of weeks before I can really say how I think this year is going to go.
One of the things I've been wondering, and I don't know if you've been asked this before, but I think about it a lot. The chemistry between the head coach and the quarterback. I haven't seen anything that worries me, but I just haven't seen like this super bond that's evident, at least, you know, watching the games, you know, like they're kind of far apart from each other on the sidelines when the defense is on the field. What do you think about the chemistry between Zach Taylor and Joe Burrow?
Well, I think it's really good, but it's just not public. So I can see where you're coming from with that. Do you remember last year, the Titans game where the clip went viral, Burrow came off the field and he was just screaming and cussing and they caught the lip readers and it was basically just saying like Burrow was saying, this is so embarrassing. And Zach Taylor has to go over, take his headset and like calm him down. That, I think, showed a behind-the-scenes curtain. It was also during Quarterback that was on Netflix this summer. I think that shows their relationship where it's almost like Zach Taylor plays the head coach, let me calm you down. Let's not make this a thing, because if people see quarterback losing it on the sidelines, right, how's that going to, you know, go down to the rest of the team? But I can see where you're coming from with that, because Zach Taylor is just so, like, one way the whole time. You don't see a high, you don't see a low. But I do think that behind the scenes, they do have a really good relationship. In fact, I know that. But it's interesting that you bring that up, because like I just said, the pressure is on Zach Taylor. Right now, Joe Burrow is Zach Taylor's biggest fan because their offense is good. Joe pretty much gets to dictate what they do because Zach Taylor's a very player friendly, wants Joe Burrow to feel like it's his show. But I don't know that Joe Burrow is going to be juiced up if, you know, they start 1-3 again about his head coach.
Well, so it's never been a matter of producing points.
Right.
It's always been
win games.
Do you have enough? Have you scored enough? Have you scored five touchdowns so that the defense can be what it's been and you're still ahead?
But that's what makes this season so interesting to me, is there's so many storylines that we don't even really talk about right now because we're just so focused on the, are they going to be better in the month of September? But like, if things don't go well right now, Joe Burrow being Zach Taylor's biggest advocate is huge. And that's something that you can't even explain how important that is in that franchise. But like we just said, you know, everything's been sunshine and roses for them pretty much the last couple of years because of how they started. And it'll be interesting to see their dynamic as the season goes if things don't go well.
All right. And with that, before we bring on Lap, as everybody, as you guys that know him well call him, Dave Lapham, he's joining or entering the Ring of Honor. What does it take? How does that work, Kelsey?
So the Bengals started this Ring of Honor process a couple of years ago. They were one of the very few teams that didn't have a Ring of Honor, which people didn't really understand and weren't really thrilled about. So Elizabeth Blackburn, who is in charge of their fan engagement, came in and started this process 3 years ago.
Mike Brown's granddaughter.
Yes. And so the way it works is only season ticket members and suite holders can vote on this. They come out with a ballot in June and they leave it open for a few weeks. And those people get an email explaining here's how you can vote. So the qualifications for this is someone has to be retired, have been to a Pro Bowl, team records, achievements, and received 50 votes from the fans and the media to even be on the ballot. So that's how they get there. And then the season ticket members and the suite members get to vote, and they leave it open for a couple of weeks. And then from whoever gets the most votes that season, they will they'll get inducted. But the interesting part of this is that I get a lot of questions like how often do they update the ballot? And so you're starting to think about players like, you know, AJ Green and Chad Ochocinco, like, when are those guys going to get their turn? So it'll be interesting to see how often they update the ballot. But right now, the ballot has pretty much stayed the same, I think, because they want to get some of these older players that have been very important to the franchise in. But that's the process. So if you're not a season ticket member or suite holder, you don't get to vote. But that's how the Bengals have set this up. They want to do something special for the people that pay the money that they do to be season ticket members.
All right. So with Lamar Parrish, who was a great return guy, slam dunk, I think, for the Ring of Honor, and another slam dunk, not just for his playing career, but almost four decades behind the microphone with the Cincinnati Bengals, Dave Lapham. Let's bring on Lap. Special guest time on the That's So Cincinnati podcast. And as promised, we have with us the 2025 Ring of Honor inductee for the Cincinnati Bengals, Dave Lapham. Dave, welcome to the podcast.
Appreciate the opportunity, guys. Thanks very much for the invitation.
Well, so you're a busy guy this time of year, as is Kelsey, as everybody's ramping up for week one. But before we get into all of that and your prognostications and observations, Dave, let's just reflect on the honor bestowed upon you. Were you surprised when you found out?
Totally shocked. Yeah, I really was. You know, it's an incredible honor to have bestowed upon you. There's no question about that. And there are so many deserving candidates for the Cincinnati Bengals. You know, in their Ring of Honor, they've only got 10 people in there. And the two of us, myself and Lamar Parrish, will make a dozen. So when you think of all the great players at every position and every position group for the Cincinnati Bengals over their illustrious history, it's quite an honor. It's an amazing honor. It's something I do not take lightly, that's for sure. And my family is, over the moon. Neither one of my parents are here. I wish they were, but they're not here. But all my brothers and sisters and a lot of friends are coming out from the East Coast to be part of the celebration. So I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be a big weekend, that's for sure.
Is a lot of that family still in Massachusetts?
Yes, Massachusetts and New Hampshire and Maine, all up in that New England area. And they've got, kids, and their kids are coming. Grandkids are coming. I'm happiest for my kids and grandkids. They're uber excited about it. They can't stop talking about it. I bet they're wearing their friends out talking about it. So they're having a good time with it, that's for sure.
Well, that's great. Talk a little bit about the team when you were drafted. You went in the third round?
Yes, sir.
And, you talk about the great Bengals teams. They really hadn't achieved greatness as of yet. I think you were a key building block of one of the first great Bengals team. Can you talk a little bit about that, how that team came together?
Well, you're very kind to reference me as a building block. I block is accurate, that was my job basically to block people, try to knock people around at the line of scrimmage and get a running game going and protect the quarterback. But yeah, you're right. It had not, Paul Brown, of course, the legendary Paul Brown, founded the Cincinnati Bengals, put them together, was the master of the early drafts. And, when he drafted Gray Cook out of UC, he thought he was off and running. He thought he had the next great quarterback. And everybody in the league thought the same thing. And then, unfortunately, the tragic injury to his shoulder, he literally ripped everything, ripped his deltoid and his, everything he can rip in the shoulder, every muscle and every tendon and every ligament. I mean, this thing was just a total wipeout. And he had surgery, never able to rehab fully, and never was able to throw a football again, with any kind of strength or accuracy. And what a damn shame, because this guy had it all. I mean, gosh, you big physical guy, 6'4"-ish, 225, 30 pounds kind of guy that ran 4.5 and It could make you miss, could run you over. I mean, he could do everything. And he led UC to some tremendous seasons, and Bengals thought he's going to do the same thing here in Cincinnati. But then, you know, Paul Brown drafted Kenny Anderson, and off we went. Kenny Anderson took us to playoff appearances, playoff victories, Super Bowl appearances. Didn't win a Super Bowl, but got to the big show. And obviously that's the goal of this year's team, is to get back to the playoffs and win some playoff games, win a first, second round playoff game, get that AFC championship game, see if you can put one together that week and play well and get to the Super Bowl. So I think this team is made of the right stuff. I think it's well put together. I think that they've done a really good job in terms of drafting, you know, well. And, you know, you're going to miss some. Everybody always does. But when you hit as big as they've hit with some of the ones that they've hit on, that's what makes the difference.
Lab, I want to go to your media career, since you just touched on early on in your playing career. And it's actually funny, like I've now, this might going to be my fifth season covering the team, and I don't think I've actually ever asked anyone this. So I'm excited to get this story from you. How did you decide after you were done playing that you wanted to become the main voice of the Bengals on the radio? Did Mike Brown present that job to you? How did that come together?
Yeah, it's interesting, Kelsey. He didn't really present it to me, but I know, I found out after the fact from Mike and others that he had an interest in potentially having me do the Bengals games on radio. Phil Stamp, the legendary voice of the Bengals, he was the first play-by-play voice, and had the, you know, deep baritone, you know, sounded like an alto in the opera, you know, kind of guy. And he was the play-by-play guy through the whole thing. They had a lot of different analysts, and it was like the guy would go for a year, a couple of years, nobody really for any length of time, and it was really never any real chemistry built between the play-by-play and color analyst on the broadcast team. But when I went to Syracuse to decided to go there to play football, I went to the Newhouse School of Communications. So that's why I got my degree in communications and had a major in public relations, minor in communications, TV, radio stuff, newspaper writing, magazine writing, that kind of thing, and had a minor in political science. You know, I initially went to Syracuse thinking I was going to be Perry Mason, thinking I was going to be the next great lawyer. And I got accepted to Harvard, and was going to go to Harvard Law School, you know, play football at Harvard. And then the deal was, okay, you do that, you'll get accepted to the Harvard Law School. And my mother was not happy when I turned that down and decided to go to Syracuse and play football there. But it all worked out pretty well because I decided I, you know, wanted to change my major and stay involved with the game. And I really thought about coaching initially. Then I just got married my senior year in college, and got engaged, I should say, right after, at the end of my senior year of college, got married like a week after graduated from college, right before I went to rookie training camp, and children. And, you know, next thing you know, it's like, I don't think that's going to necessarily work. So I decided to pursue the broadcast part of it when I was done playing, and approach Mike Brown, went into his office after I played 10 years with the Bengals, 2 in the USFL with the Generals. When I came back from New Jersey, went into Mike's office, and he was like, yeah, I'd definitely like to talk to you about that. I had that on my plate as something to throw out there and see if you would have an interest. So it meshed very well, and we got a deal done rather quickly.
So you and Dan Horde, who I think is just incredible, I think everybody knows that Cincinnati is really lucky to have such a versatile and great play-by-play voice. You guys are unique in that sometimes people can expect broadcast teams to be, they want them to be neutral and objective. And I've always thought it's interesting that you and Dan are very forthcoming in saying, we work for the team, like this broadcast is for the fans, and it allows you to really show your personality and your excitement for the team. And I think that's kind of what's made you and Dan such a unique pairing and has you guys well known around Cincinnati for your broadcast so much that people sometimes turn the TV off to listen to you guys do the broadcast. Have you guys, specifically you, have you always been like, this is how I'm going to do the job? And has someone ever tried to make you tone down and be someone different? Or have you just decided, this is how I feel comfortable when I'm broadcasting about the Bengals, and you've always been this way?
Yeah. And in fact, you know, I broadcasted, you know, other teams besides the Bengals, did some college football, both radio and television, more television than radio for college football, and did NFL games on NBC and a couple of other networks for a brief time. And I would have to get excused from Bengals games to do, you know, network games. So Mike Brown put a clause in the contract, like, you could only be excused twice a year. And it got to the point where, you know, I'm not going to do one. It's not even worth it. I'll never be able to, you know, to advance, or I might want to try to advance if I decide to try the network side of it with two opportunities. And honestly, I did want to stay in Cincinnati and do the Bengals radio network. And I'm glad I did, because, you know, coming up this year will be my 40th year, which is, you know, mind boggling. I just can't believe that Mike Brown and the Blackburns and everybody is the Brown family, Blackburn family, has said, you know, let's keep doing it. And I've had, you know, every play-by-play guy that's ever done Bengals football I've worked with. So it's been a heck of a run. It really has. It's been something well beyond my imagination. It boggles my mind. I could have never, ever dreamed or hoped that being in the situation that I'm in. And I'm passionate about football in general. I was as a player, you know, and if I wanted to get into coaching, thought about that for a little bit, to stay involved with the game that I love so much, but couldn't work that out. It didn't schedule-wise after being married at a young age right after graduating from college, so then having children early on. So the network, doing games, network, and radio and television on a network basis, and then locally with radio, worked perfectly for my schedule, and that's what I've decided to, you know, to go into. I've, you know, dabbled in other things, sales and marketing things with companies, and sold industrial adhesives, especially chemicals, all that kind of stuff. Interesting. Learned a lot of things about a lot of different industries and a lot of applications and all that sort of thing. But very boring when you try to compare it to what football gives you in terms of juice. That's for sure.
I know I'm one of many Bengals fans that I feel like I know what's even if I'm not watching the television broadcast, if I'm listening to the radio, I know what's going on the field just by your reaction, Dave. Like, you know, Dan Hort will be saying something like, and Burrow's scrambling out of the pocket, and I'll be holding my breath, and I'll hear you go, oh, and I know he's been sacked before Dan can even get the words out, because you're like Kelsey mentioned, You are the fans' broadcaster. I think you share our highs, you share our lows. And Kelsey asked this, but you didn't really touch on it. As a professional broadcaster, was there ever any pushback with that? Like, Dave, you got to tone it down, or Dave, you got to be less of a cheerleader. Like, you know, Sam will laugh at this because he's in the press box a lot, but we have a saying, there's no cheering in the press box. Mm-hmm. But you don't play by that rule. Have you ever gotten any pushback, or is that just who you are and everybody needs to be good with that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily, you know, want to think that, oh, you know, ego freak, you know, that's who I am and the hell with you and all that. I just think that that I've always had a passion for the game, you know, a big, big passion for the game that's almost insatiable, really. And I think, you know, my coaches, teammates, everybody has realized that fact that I've either played with or, you know, been associated with from a player-coach relationship standpoint. So I just, yeah, I mean, I was basically the station manager and the guy who was in charge of the broadcast rights and all that sort of thing. He said, look, you know, just do football, you know, be yourself. You know the game. You understand the game. You played the game. You could have coached the game. You know, there's not much about football that has you tongue-tied or buffaloed or whatever. So just let it out. Let it go, you know, and have fun. Enjoy yourself. So when he said, you know, have fun, I was like, oh, you're okay. There we go. Let's game go. On. Let's game on. Exactly. Let's get it done. And it's been, I just can't believe 40 years. It's ridiculous. I can't believe that number, 50 years total with the organization. Again, you know, Mike Brown, the Brown family, the Blackburn family, they've been more than kind to me to give me an opportunity to stay around here that long and establish relationships with everybody that I have, and really, you know, share a deep love for the Cincinnati Bengals with every fan. And I'm a lifelong Bengal fan. There's no doubt. You know, I was as a player, am as a broadcaster, and will be the rest of my life for sure.
When you signed with Cincinnati, I know it's hard at the time to look ahead, but did you think that you were moving into what would become your lifelong home?
You know, yeah, like you said, I don't think that, you know, I could look into a crystal ball and see that, you know, see that future. I guess I probably hoped, you know, deep down inside in the back of my head or whatever. I know I love playing. I know I love football. I know I love playing football for the Cincinnati Bengals. I love playing with my teammates. I love playing for the coaches that I played for. I love the relationships that grew as a result of working with teammates on a day-to-day basis and working very hard and trying to achieve a common goal and everything that goes along, you know, with that. And it's very unique. Sports is unique in that regard. You know, you set goals, you try to achieve the goals, and you start knocking them off one at a time. And pretty soon you're climbing the ladder of success. And next thing you know, you won a division, won a playoff game or two. Here you go to the Super Bowl. Can you get it done? Just could not quite get that one done. But along the way, achieved multiple goals and had a very, very successful season. And that's what you try to do. That's what you try to strive for during the course of your career. And if you're lucky enough, hopefully you win the big one.
Well, speaking of that, I have one more for you, Lap. This might be a challenging question, so I apologize if I put you on the spot. But I would assume that your favorite broadcast had to do with that 2021 season. If not, what has been your favorite game to broadcast?
Yeah, I would say the Super Bowls that I broadcasted. You know, I was not lucky enough to win as a player with Super Bowl 16. You know, didn't quite get it done against the 49ers. Super Bowl 23, broadcasted that against the 49ers. Did not quite get that one done either. And the most recent Super Bowl with Joe Burrow at the quarterback position, you know, couldn't quite get it done as well. But the three quarterbacks that played, Kenny Anderson, Boomer Esiason, and Joe Burrow, are all, you know, just unbelievable players, the top of the top, top rung of players in franchise history. So I think playing in and broadcasting, you know, I know you mentioned, you know, games that I broadcasted, but I guess playing in a Super Bowl is a big thrill. I never thought I'd play in a Super Bowl. I mean, some snot-nosed kid from Wakefield, Massachusetts, you know, that real small hometown, you know, it's like, what the hell, this he's going to play in the Super Bowl? Yeah, I can't believe it. I am. It's crazy.
How hard was it to shake off that loss? I mean, it was close, 26-21. Is there one particular play that haunts you to this day that you just keep going over in your mind about, if we would have just done this?
I think the goal line stand. They had a big goal line stand on us that ultimately decided the football game. If we could have punched that in, I think the defense would have held on. We would have won that football game. But, you know, we couldn't quite get that done. And you talk about, man, losing sleep. After that game, you know, being part of, you know, the offensive football team that could not quite punch that football in, man, we drove the ball well. The entire field made plays, converted third downs, and get inside the red zone and low red zone and sputter out. A nightmare. You don't want to do it in any football game, never mind the Super Bowl. You don't want to do it in a regular season game or a playoff game or any game. But, you know, that was probably the hardest thing I ever had to deal with. My biggest nightmare of my football life. is that the goal line stand. I still have nightmares about it periodically. I lost a lot of sleep, man, in the early stages after that. After that game, you know, I just couldn't get it out of my head and lay down, look at the ceiling. And the ceiling was like a screen for me with a projector running, and I'd see those plays over and over and over. And it's like, oh my God, when is this going to stop? When's this going to go away? But yeah, I'd say that, you know, the biggest plays, you know, you get great plays, obviously. You know, you have quarterbacks like Kenny Anderson, Boomer Esiason, and Joe Burrow, like I referenced. They've made tons of big plays to great receivers, you know, Isaac Curtis, Jamar Chase, everybody in between, T. Higgins. I mean, everybody, all those quarterbacks in every year had great weapons and smart coaches that utilized the passing game to their advantage. You know, they had very fertile football minds and would come up with formations and motions and things of that nature. Personnel groupings take advantage of defensive football teams. So, yeah, all of that is great, great memories. But, man, if you're fortunate enough to get to the big one, man, you thank your lucky stars, you feel blessed. But if you don't win it, there's no lower low. Uh-huh. I mean, it is like the bottom. It's the bottomless pit. You know, it's like, when is the low going to end? It's like you fell off a cliff and you're falling in a canyon, and the canyon never ends. It's crazy. So I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy, I can tell you that.
Well, I'm sorry I took you back there, Dave. Did you?
No problem.
Did that give you an opportunity when the team lost in the Super Bowl in 2021? Were you able to help some of those guys, you know, get through that?
You know, I tried to. You know, I remembered what I felt like. And the thing I remembered most that came to my mind first and foremost was I just wanted to be left alone. I didn't want anybody, you know, came close. I just couldn't quite get it now. You know, leave me alone. Let me deal with this. Let me work this out in my head the way I need to. And you know, give me some time. Give me some space. Unfortunately, it was more than just after the game. You know, I go out to see my family and friends and everything. It's like, everybody's, you know, they didn't know what to say. You know, they knew how important it was to me, and they didn't know what to say, what to do. I felt badly for them almost because, you know, it's like, you know, how do we deal with this guy? What do we do with him? Yeah. So, yeah, it was tough. It was tough on everybody. Tough on my wife. My wife, Lynn, had to deal with all of that and, you know, play it by ear in terms of, can we talk about anything else besides nothing today? So I do admire the way she handled it all.
That's great. I do have one more question before we quickly get your thoughts on this upcoming season. In my elaborate show prep, I had forgotten until I looked at some notes that you did two years in the USFL. You played for the New Jersey Generals. That team was owned by Donald Trump. Did you have any day in and day out contact with him? What was he like back then as a team owner? Or did you just not see him?
No, he was very visible. He was hands-on. In fact, he negotiated the contracts. When they had territorial rights, regional rights, the USFL did with NFL teams, and the New Jersey Generals had the rights of the Cincinnati Bengals somehow. And so I was approached by the New Jersey Generals. A gentleman named Jim Valick, who is the general manager of the football team, reached out to me and said, you know, we'd like to have you come to New York City, you know, to the New Jersey, New York metropolitan area, and visit, take a look, you know, bring your wife, show you some places, take you to dinner, whatever, and meet Donald Trump, meet Mr. Trump. And I was like, oh boy, how about that? So the Trump Tower had just been done. It had just been completed, literally. I mean, like weeks before. And that's where we went. We went into the Trump Tower all the way up to the top floor, the penthouse of the Trump Tower. And, you know, it was all glass all the way around the penthouse. And you look out and you see the water and you see the downtown Manhattan. It's like, geez, man, this is pretty impressive. And you know, he basically offered a contract that involved guaranteed money. He guaranteed the bonus, obviously. He guaranteed the first and second year salary. So at that point, I was like, I'm going to listen to this. So I'd already played 10 years, and I thought, you know, I'm year to year anyway. And what if I have some sort of an injury? If it happens here, I still get paid good money for a two-year period. So that was a big, big factor in my decision to play in the USFL, was the guaranteed money. It was almost like an annuity came due. And you got a big payout from that annuity. And 10 years of NFL football paid out to a 2 years of guaranteed contract. So did that. And then, you know, came back to Cincinnati. We never left Cincinnati. We kept our house in Cincinnati. And my kids were young, but school age. So they were half the year of school in Cincinnati, half the year of school in New York, New Jersey metropolitan area. And so that was a challenge for them. And I admire them for getting through what they got through. They did a great job. And we finished the USFL seasons, came back to Cincinnati. And Mike Brown said, you know, I had always had you as a candidate to do color on our Bengals radio broadcast. And I said, well, that's interesting. I would like to talk about that, because I'd always had an interest in that type of thing. Went to the Newhouse School of Communications at Syracuse University and got a degree in communications, and let's go. So we worked something out, and 50 years later, there it is, 40 years in the booth, 10 years on the field. And I don't think there's a luckier guy alive, man. It's crazy. It really is.
All right. When you met Donald Trump, when you were looking across the desk at him, did it ever dawn on you that you were looking at a future president of the United States?
It never did. I can be totally honest with that. He was a very, very tough negotiator. Oh, my gosh.
I've heard that about him.
Yeah. I mean, it was once he got me up to the top of the Trump Tower, he wasn't going to let us go. You know, I had a lawyer with me, an agent lawyer, family friend type guy, and in fact he was my line coach when I was a sophomore in high school, and a very smart guy, and got his law degree, and so he helped negotiate the contract, and at one point, you know, he kind of we excused ourselves from the grueling session, and he goes, hey, he's not letting you out of here. You know, I said, well, you know, I think they're talking turkey here. That is pretty impressive, you know. And so let's see what happens. But yeah, I mean, he was a very stern, tough negotiator, and he's probably all of that and more now, I bet. But he was very very impressive, but very fair. He was very fair, very honest, very impressive. Wasn't trying to hide anything and then spring it on you, you know, after the fact. I mean, he was very forthright and you know, very. A very likable guy. I found him to be very likable. He doesn't come across that way all the time, but he's, you know, off camera, away from the buzz of the public. He's a very likable guy. Very, very intelligent, man. There's no flies on Donald Trump, I can tell you that.
All right. We know you're busy, but quickly, I'm talking to the great Dave Lapham. Across me is Kelsey Conway, who is, you know, with the team every day. I represent average Cincinnati fan who my view of the team so far is what I have seen during the preseason games. And I'm feeling worried about the defense and super concerned that they get off to a fast start. What would you tell me? I'll assist to both of you. What would you tell me about that perception I have based on your behind the scenes knowledge and what you've seen that I haven't?
Go ahead, Kelsey.
I think that all we know about the concern level on the defense is what I can tell you what Al Golden has repeatedly shared with us, and that is they are hanging their hats on the fact that they didn't show a lot of what they're going to be doing on defense in the preseason games from a competitive standpoint. They want to be able to put out Golden's new defense with some wrinkles in Cleveland, and they were super concerned with not showing that, and that led to maybe some of the decisions made on the field. And Al Golden took responsibility for that. They also, in the preseason, didn't have a lot of their starters all playing at the same time. Yesterday, Zach Taylor touched on that about how, you know, they didn't have Trey Hendrickson playing in the preseason and practices. Miles Murphy was dealing with an injury. Shamar Stewart, they kind of had the training wheels on him up front. BJ Hill was injured. And then on the back end, TJ Turner's had an injury. So they feel like a little bit they haven't really been able to get their full starters out there in a game where they feel like it would maybe resemble what we're going to see this Sunday. But to that point, you know, it's really hard to judge. Concern is warranted. At the end of the day, you still have to be able to tackle and do the basic fundamental things, regardless of what Al Golden's going to scheme up. So I do think that is, and you know, Al Golden said that they need to tackle better. So I get the fan concern. It didn't look great, but that's kind of their side of maybe why it didn't look great. And as far as the fast starts, I mean, they feel like they've done everything they can to get this team going, and Burrow being out there every day with Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins every practice, I think is really going to bode well for them. But at the end of the day, only time will tell. They can do all of these things differently, but if they do not go out and play well in Cleveland and get off to a fast start there, none of that will matter. So that's my take on those two things. Lap, what do you think?
Yeah, I think you're right on, Kelsey. I mean, I think they're related. I think that the a lot of guys have been nicked up, you know, nothing serious, but injury to the point where they're not playing in the preseason games. And, you know, that's had an impact on the performance, the overall performance of the football team. They haven't played well defensively at all. I agree. They haven't stopped the run. You know, they're not getting off blocks well enough, and they're certainly not tackling well enough. And those two fundamentals that Al Golden believes in and preaches, that, you know, every defensive coordinator does. You got to be able to handle the opponent in front of you, get off of a block, and tackle effectively. And I think Al's probably a little frustrated because he has emphasized tackling in practices, in, you know, with technique and drills and form tackling and all that sort of thing. Not knocking each other around and knocking teeth out of each other, that type of thing. But you know, doing the fundamentals and getting ready for going into a football game and being able to get people on the ground the right way. And that hasn't happened, you know, consistently enough. But like Kelsey said, he hasn't even really put a game plan in. I mean, they haven't gone out in the preseason, you know, with any sort of game plan that they've met during the course of the week about and broken down film and here's what we're going to do, here's how we're going to attack, here's how we're going to get them in this situation, get this matchup. Here's what we're going to do to attack their nickel defense. Here's what their nickel defense looks like. This is what they like to do. Here's their tendencies. You know, certain down and distances, teams' form tendencies, there's no question about it. So, you know, and look at last year's tape, last year's film as well, and the Bengals' defense is going to look a lot different for opponents that are doing film study on the Bengals than what they put on the football field last year. A lot of new players. You know, draft picks, veteran free agents. So it's going to have a much different look. And we have not seen yet one iota of how Al Golden is going to attack. I think you might get a little indicator if you go back to Notre Dame and throw on some Notre Dame tape and see how he's got his defense flying around the football field there and what they're doing and how they're doing it. They have very intelligent football players there. The student body is a very intelligent group overall. There are high standards to get into Notre Dame. You don't just apply to Notre Dame and everybody gets in. That's not the way it goes. So I think he's used to dealing with a very high caliber young man. And I think he wants those kind of young men with him here with the Cincinnati Bengals, and he's working to get that done. So I'm a believer in him. I liked him when he was here as a linebacker coach, working under Lou Anarumo. I thought that he knew what he was doing, and I thought he was a great teacher, and all great coaches that I've been around, from Paul Brown on down, Tiger Johnson, my first line coach, they were great teachers of the game. And if you be a decent student of the game and keep, you know, keep focused and listen to what these coaches are telling you to do, you're going to have a successful career. And I think everybody that is affiliated with this football team, the defense, you know, is smart enough to do that. And if they play good defense, and particularly at the defense tackle position, I think that's an area where they need the biggest improvement. And I think they've made improvements there personnel-wise, the draft and free agency. Same thing, offensive line at the guard position. I think they've made improvements there, you know, with the draft and free agency as well. If those two position groups can play at a higher level and help the entire football team get off to a faster start, you know, these 0-2, 0-3 starts ain't going to cut it, you know. Get your first win in week four. That's not good enough. You can't be 1-3, 1-4, and hope to, you know, be a contender, hope to be in the playoffs and make some noise in the playoffs. So make some improvements at key positions on the football team that need the improvements. Get off to the fast start and let it rip.
All right. Well, Dave Lapham, thank you for being on the podcast. Again, congratulations on the Ring of Honor 2025 induction. That game is October 26th at Paycor Stadium. You and Lamar Parrish joining the Ring of Honor. I think it's going to be a full house, not just with all the people you're bringing in from the East Coast, but all the Cincinnati fans that are going to just be thrilled to watch that moment. So from all of us at the Enquirer, Dave, congratulations.
Appreciate that very much. It means a lot. It means everything to me, really. I mean, football, you know, is it's other than family and friends, it's the most important thing in my life. It's been my life's work. I love the game, love everything about the game. I think it's the greatest game that's ever been created, and the friends and you know, acquaintances that I've made from the game of football are unbelievable. Wouldn't change a thing about it. So I appreciate it. Thanks very much. I know my family is going to be you know, over the moon. My grandkids are chirping like crazy. I mean, their friends are sick of them hearing about. Bragging about their grandfather going into the Ring of Honor. So I guess it'll be good when it happens. I'm looking forward to it. I know that.
All right. Well, Dave, thanks for joining us again. And hooday.
Hooday.
Thanks, Lap.
Thanks, Kelsey.
All right, so Kelsey, I have this vision of all of these Bengals fans Googling up Notre Dame during the golden era to, like Dave said, kind of get a preview of what this defense might look like. What do you think?
I think that, and I think that when they were playing the national championship game against Ohio State, I think there was a lot of Bengals fans watching that game knowing Al Golden was going to be the new DC, but I think maybe if you were able to see the Google Analytics, I would wonder how many Bengals fans search Al Golden's defense at Notre Dame.
We can just find that out. We have ways. Yes, we're all about the analytics. All right, so I have a really That's So Cincinnati story involving Lapham. First time I met Dave was at a event that the Enquirer sponsored, which we do every year, called Top Workplaces. And Dave was giving the keynote at that event. And if you've ever had the opportunity to see Dave Lapham do a keynote, it's just like you would expect. It's rah-rah. It's, you know, all about team. No I in team. Work hard. He's just, you know, he's so positive all the time. And so anyway, I had met him at this event. The very next day, I was scheduled to have lunch with the marketing director for Skyline Chili. Had not met her before. You know, I was relatively new on the job, so I was meeting a bunch of different people in town. And we, in case you haven't noticed, we cover Skyline a lot, like, you know, everything that they do. And anyway, I was looking forward to meeting her. And so we meet at a Skyline, and her name is Sarah, and she's a wonderful person. And she's like, how are things going? She's like, it seems like really busy right now. And I said, yeah, this is a busy time of year for us. We have a lot of events going on right now. In fact, I was at an event last night and I got to meet Dave Lapham, and she got this big smile on her face and she's like, yeah, that's my dad. Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
It's a good thing I didn't say what I was thinking. I was about to say, and man, can that guy put away the chicken wings? I mean, you know, so you just never know in this town because people stay here or they move and they come back like you did, Kelsey.
Right.
How people are connected. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Dave's daughter, who he mentioned his family many times because of moving to New Jersey and back, his daughter, Sarah. If you've ever been impressed with all the creativity that comes out of Skyline and how they market and the partnerships they do and everything like that, his daughter's a big force behind that.
That's an awesome story.
So that's my Cincinnati story. You know, how there's like one degree of separation between most people here. You got to be careful. Got to watch your back. Anyway, are you ready for the season?
I am ready for the season. It's, you get to this week and you're ready to have something new to write about. You've been writing about what ifs and all of those hypotheticals for the last 6 months. And I'm really looking forward to being able to go up to Cleveland, cover the game, and have some new things to talk about.
All right. Well, you know, we were talking about Dave's enthusiasm in the booth. My brothers and I, and if you've listened to Lap over the years, you know this too. When he does the locker room interviews and the Bengals have lost, it's quiet, sad Dave. He's like, okay, I'm in the locker room now. Like, he's like, he feels the loss himself, right? And so much to the degree that, like, my brothers and I will describe somebody who's talking sad, like, oh man, this person's really sad. How sad is he? Oh, he's like Dave Lapham in the locker room after the Bengals lost, sad. So that's sort of the other fun thing I thought I would share about just growing up and listening to Lap and how he truly is woven himself into the fabric, not just of sports fans, but, you know, like I said, he does a lot of charitable work around town. He's always willing to step up when people ask him. So,
yeah,
a worthy selection for the Ring of Honor.
Absolutely, especially the 50th season.
Can you imagine?
Yeah, that's crazy.
It is crazy. All right, well, should we wrap this up?
I think we should.
All right. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the That's So Cincinnati podcast, a production of The Enquirer and Cincinnati.com.
If you enjoyed the podcast, please give us a rating and share it with a friend who loves all things Cincinnati.
And finally, if you value local journalism and haven't subscribed for full digital access to Cincinnati.com, now's a great time. Just go to Cincinnati.com and click on the subscribe button to see a special offer just for you.
Thanks again. See you next week.